Do you know you've interrupted a 3-year study of the Chernobyl earthworm?
Yeah, you're the worm guy, right?
The radioactive contamination in that area has mutated the earthworm's DNA. You know what that means?
No, but I got a feeling I'm about to find out.
It means that because of a man-made accident, the Chernobyl earthworms are now 17% larger than they were before.
17%, huh? Sounds pretty big.
They're enormous.
They mentioned you by name.
Yeah.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 417, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. He always hypnotizes people with a French lighter, Dunaway.
Look at it. Ooh, hell hi. This week on Film Sack, Godzilla is coming to America. And not just any Godzilla, but a giant lizardzilla mutated by a nuke-dropping French. Wee-wee poo-poo. And just look at the chin on this Gojira. So big. So strong. So pregnant. So full of eggs. Nature finds a way indeed. It probably shouldn't, but it really does insist. Now excuse me while I go brew a cup of the most disappointing coffee ever, according to the French. And hey, nature, stop being a dick. Gojira. Gojira.
What, because all the rain? Is that what that was your problem there at the end?
So much rain.
Yeah, there's a lot
so
of rain.
So much. No, because every time we try to stretch our little wings a little bit, drop a couple of nukes or we create some kind of global catastrophe, nature wants to be a dick.
Yeah. Well, in movies. But yeah, you're right. In real life, should say.
In real life.
Different kind of problem.
I was projecting. We're the dicks.
Yeah, we're the dicks.
I was projecting.
Yeah. Well done. Also with us, Randy, real life Kent Brockman is a perv, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi,
Randy. I'm coming to you live from the heart of the city, where fantastic events have occurred these last 7 hours, unless you've seen Jurassic Park. A great creature appears to have arisen from the sea after traveling here from French Polynesia at 2 to 3 times the speed of sound, and then deposited 10 times its own body weight in eggs in Madison Square Garden over the course of a few minutes. The process somehow made the creature even bigger when you see it compared to buildings, but not so big when you see it compared to people. Authorities tell me not to worry, as this one appears to have fallen in love with a local scientist who appears to have fallen in love with his ex-girlfriend, who appears to have fallen in love with creating the sort of mischief that will surely bring down the beast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled program because we haven't yet invented smartphones.
Oh my gosh. Smartphones would have been really helpful in lots of places in this movie. They had cell phones,
1998, baby.
Need some photo and video action, man. Nicely done. Also, and finally, Brian, we hired only Simpsons and Melrose Place actors, Ibbot.
Oh, yes, you got the Melrose Place connection there, too. Mm-hmm. And coincidentally, believe it or not, I can't explain why, but I actually own the DVD of this movie, and in addition to the full-length Puff Daddy video for the song that's on the soundtrack, it also comes with some bonus scenes, one of which I will play for you now. Let me get my DVD player hooked up here. All right, hit play. Okay, here we go. Mr. Burnsides, there appears to be a problem in Sector 7.
What is it, Smothers? Can't you see I'm busy?
There seems to be a giant nuclear lizard attacking Manhattan, and several of the townspeople are seeking refuge in our bunkers.
What? Release the hounds.
No need to do that, Mr. Burnsides. This is Joe, the bartender. Listen, a few of us have this idea that if we can lure the monster into a major sporting arena, we can take it out from there.
Oh, and what will you use to attract said monster?
We were thinking donuts.
Yes, I can supply a large case of donuts to attract the monster to the stadium. Thank you, come again, I'm racist.
That is correct. I, Professor Frank,
can lure the giant attacking Reptilia Lacertilia into the stadium where it will have many babies and the fish and the basketball rim and the flavin. Well, it sounds like we've heard from just about everybody. Thank goodness. Oh, except one more person. Worst set of impressions ever.
pretty good impression of Azaria doing impression.
It was pretty good. A Kazaria impression. I think one of them might have been a Harry Shearer impression.
I thought one of them was Bullwinkle.
Yeah, I know. My Mr. Burns, it's funny you say that because as I was practicing this a few times before the call, right. I was thinking, shit, my Mr. Burns is starting to evolve into a Bullwinkle.
I regularly get that. I tap my fingers together at work and I say, excellent.
Oh,
and people tell me, why are you doing Bullwinkle there?
Right?
Hey, Smithers, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Nothing up my sleeve.
That never works.
All right, then you're describing a cartoon I would watch on Fox. All right, so did you guys catch the third major Simpsons voice character actor in the movie?
Oh, I did not.
Nancy Cartwright.
Nancy Cartwright, indeed. She was the secretary to Harry Shearer, only briefly, the one that said, I think I found your story, and pointed outside. That's a voice of Bart Simpson and various other characters in the and the Simpsons, but I captured it, so we'll hear it later. But yeah, she, I don't know. I mean, why she's in it is just,
Right. This was 1998. So I remember there was a big, I think around 98 was when they had the big, when all the voice actors really pushed hard for more money.
For a raise. Yeah. Because they were like, oh, we'll start taking movie roles. Look, Hank Azaria had done what? The Birdcage by then Mad About You and
Birdcage may have been the same year, was it?
Was it the same year as Godzilla?
Yeah, that was an amazing role.
So this was a little bit of rebellion from the voice actors on Simpsons. So I like that. I thought it was fun.
I don't know, but it's just odd. But fine, it's fine. I liked hearing them, and that's about the best part of the film, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Matthew Broderick, was it the best part of the film?
Well, all right. I gotta give
that to the setup for his character. The Chernobyl / Hawaii stuff, I thought was the best part.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he wasn't there very long, and he has a weird vibrato, which again we'll play later when we do clips,
Doesn't he do it so well, though? I mean,
does he?
He was just so himself in this movie. I would have never put his character in with a Godzilla movie. So
no,
yeah, me neither.
I wouldn't put like 2/3 of these characters in with a Godzilla movie.
No, but
Godzilla, I think, was the only character I would have maybe put in a Godzilla movie, and even that's on the edge because he's not really Godzilla.
No, he's just an irradiated lizard. It's not the same. Yeah. Okay, we can
of course
get
I would have never put Will Smith in a suit to punch an alien either. So I mean,
yeah, mm-hmm. Welcome to the same director writers. Like, yeah, they make a lot of bad decisions in their lives. So, Godzilla.
Bad or it's, unique decision?
It's a little bit of both. Column A and B. Godzilla, 1998. Godzilla. That's the movie. Well, we're talking a pre-Matrix era here. That's the era we're in for our action thing. And also, we're
post Jurassic Park, and right in the middle of Taco Bell spending more money than, I don't know, just about anybody at this point in time on marketing. Just crazy amounts of money.
Oh, right. They had the license.
Taco Bell. Yeah, they did.
Because that's right. The little chihuahuas in the, like, the commercials with the Godzilla. Mm-hmm. That's right.
How do you remember that? That's hilarious.
I completely forgot that. But yes, right. Taco Bell and their Godzilla commercials. Did they have, I mean, they don't have kids' meals with toys, so I guess they didn't have
They had the cups. They had contest. Yeah, they had contest, so you could head to Taco Bell, grab you a Baja Blast, peel the sticker, see if you could win a trip to New York. I remember all this stuff.
Come on. Baja Blast was not around when Godzilla.
No, it was something else. But it may have been
Code Red was around
Dew.
When
it was like Mountain
right,
Dew.
It was right around the corner, though.
It's probably Mountain Dew, but also I just remember those cups, like they were the big dumb green logo that freaking. I don't know.
Crap. I think I've got one of those.
Really?
No, it's a Slurpee. I think I've got a Godzilla Slurpee cup upstairs somewhere.
That's great. You should have one. Everyone should have one.
Everyone should have one. Nobody should have one, I mean.
This is a movie where there's very little care taken to continue Godzilla for what it was or is, and instead just say, hey, what if it's none of that? What if it's just this mindless lizard that mm-hmm. we created because we nuked a thing. We did a nuke test, and now there's a giant lizard.
We didn't do it. The French did it. Get it right.
Well, all right. The French did it. And then the only real reference to the Godzilla legacy is just naming it that. That's it.
Right. And naming it, and even doing the Gojira. Mm-hmm. And then the translation and the, I mean, they, you know, that's the only part of this they get right. And apparently, according to the trivia, the company that made the original Godzilla movies Toho. Gave Roland Emmerich a dossier yeah. of what they could and could not do with Godzilla's character. Right.
There's so much online about what Toho had to say about this movie that it can't all be true. Some of it has to be, you know, Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of rumor that people made up.
Right.
There's just so much.
Yeah.
How could maybe,
so you don't think he was sitting around brooding all the way up? It's like, oh, hey, I'm a big Godzilla fan, but, yeah. and people hold these movies in high reverence, but you got to remember it's Godzilla. It's a man in a suit. Come on.
Well,
I mean, I love Godzilla.
What I'm getting at is there's no way that Toho really exerted much control on this thing. If they gave the license to freaking Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin, they already clearly don't give a shit about their property.
But they didn't really sell it to them, did they? I thought they kind of gave it to TriStar. They trusted TriStar, and TriStar said, "Watch this."
Well, according to the director, Roland Emmerich says, "Look, I don't even care for this. I don't like Godzilla as it is. So yeah, unless you let me do what I want, then I don't want this project."
That he said that.
Yeah. So that he did what he wanted, which was to make a kind of generic giant lizard movie. Mm-hmm. And for me, tonally, it's not so much that, like, I really like the 2013 or 2014, whatever it is, reboot. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to the next one.
Part of the, what do they call it? The Universal Giant Monsters universe or something?
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. Like, it's a good, it's a good interpretation of what made that great. The monster looks like freaking Godzilla or Gojira.
Gojira. It is. I agree with you. It's they are definitely heading in the right direction, and this feels like what it should feel like. But I'm also down with this. I feel like this is almost like an homage to the monster movies and disaster movies of, like, you know, the 50s and even some of the 70s stuff. And
it's
not Godzilla.
It's just Roland Emmerich making a movie in the time that he's making the movie. Mm. Like, mm-hmm. it's so similar to Armageddon and Deep Impact and Jurassic Park. Mm. And it's like, there's absolutely nothing new in the movie. You would think he could have had an homage to older, more interesting things, but he doesn't. There's nothing good.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. Like, would there, the options are, do a monster movie that is not called Godzilla and just have it be this and have it be, you know, all the things that you're kind of seeing in this film, or do you call it Godzilla and then have these requirements like, well, okay, we can't kill the monster at the end.
Right.
And we can't, you know, it has to act like this or look somewhat like this or breathe fire or whatever.
I
remember Godzilla breathing smoke.
I remember Godzilla having all sorts of awesome different breath weapons, depending on the time frame and the movie and the TV show. There was a Godzilla TV show that I loved very, very much. And Godzilla, when you kind of like sum it all up over decades, has a powerful breath weapon. Except in this movie, for some reason,
I thought it was always
he had a breath weapon. Well, no, it was full of fish. Every time he went, rah! I was like, fish chunks come flying out.
Yeah, that was gross. But the fire thing. I don't remember Godzilla ever doing fire. He may have had other various weapons.
Yeah,
mostly
like lasers and different things. If you go back to the history of Godzilla,
you're thinking of Mecha Godzilla with the lasers.
Well,
right?
it wasn't necessarily laser. It was more like a red beam almost. If you go back and watch it, Mecha Godzilla also did. You're right. But no, Godzilla also had like
Was that out of his mouth or out of his eyes?
Well, his reptilian scales on the back of his, you know, those little fins or whatever they call them. What do they call those on reptiles that are? They would glow And he would you know, suck in energy. And
right.
Yeah. I found it. It says, besides traditional glasses or... Wait, hold on. Who is Godzilla? What is a laser?
What is a laser?
What is a laser?
It's continuing consistent imaging with some... Boy, the internet sometimes is just such a letdown.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's so much Godzilla and so much history. That's the reason why I wasn't too disappointed that we got a different interpretation. Who cares? There's so many Godzillas. It is fine.
We got Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin just doing their own thing, and it's just not. They're just not as into it as anybody would really like them to be.
That's the part I hated the most, that they just kind of, they thought the original Godzilla was lame and they wanted to create a monster movie of sorts. And they made that, and it was not honoring of Godzilla. However, hey, you know, it's a still a system 1998 movie that was mostly sponsored by Taco Bell.
Yeah. And you know what? It had, like I say, it had Matthew Broderick, who was always fun, always seemed to be having fun, and you can't go completely wrong with that sort of thing, you know, with accessing the part of my brain that thinks Ferris Bueller's Day Off is the greatest movie ever made. You can't go totally wrong. You're going to keep me for the whole movie, at least, unless you kill Broderick.
I mean, there's some fun to be had, and they do play it pretty light. This catastrophe that's killing people just by it walking randomly through town is sure making everybody just crack a lot of jokes and act like nothing's no big deal. Like, it's really a light disaster in terms of impact, which is interesting because, like, his Day After Tomorrow, or what was that movie? Day After
Tomorrow. Day After Tomorrow.
Is that right? That doesn't sound right.
Yeah, the Day After Tomorrow, 2004.
Okay. That movie, like, takes the
Dennis Quaid.
It takes it seriously. It's like, oh, what would be the impact of this problem? And, you know, they don't just goof around. This just goofs around, and it's okay to goof around. It's not a problem, I guess, that I have with, you know, a movie. But in this particular case, it just felt like there was no stakes. Like, nothing really bad was going to happen.
Oh, absolutely not. Because the story is old. We know where it's got to go, right? I mean, there's no twist or turns. And, I mean, this movie never stood a chance coming out in 1998, just, you know, however many years after Jurassic Park. I mean, it was destined to be compared to everything around it. It didn't have a chance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It made a bunch of money, but it didn't make quite enough it did make enough to get sequel consideration, but they didn't do it. And there's a big story as to why, and I don't want to get into it, but
they were
supposed to do it.
But anytime you do a Godzilla quote-unquote reboot, you kind of have to waste the first movie on Godzilla gets on land and makes a bunch of like a big mess and then leaves.
Yeah.
They didn't have
scared
to.
Away.
That's another thing. This is the prime territory for making two movies into one movie, where for my money, they would have spent more time establishing. The establishing part of the film was the best part of the film. The first, I don't know, 20 minutes.
The origin story, the sad lizards watching the nuclear cloud.
And then looking over going like, oh, what's that?
The first two minutes were actually really interesting and felt like they were made by someone else. So like there was a second director who set out to make the first 2 minutes.
Yeah.
That person was really good.
Yeah,
and that was probably more Godzilla than anything else that was done in this movie, because that's also something they did. That opening montage of clips and things is what I think they really did in the more recent one as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they take great care to do that, because, like, especially in the early Japanese stuff, there, the whole metaphor of the monster is post nuke world, and who better to know what that feels like than the Isle of Japan. So I just
wanted to say, this movie that we watched is like 107 hours long, and it's important that if you're gonna have this long film, that you tell a lot of stories. Mm-hmm. And like, I think we learned this before this movie came out, that you could have a movie like Titanic, which was ostensibly about the sinking of the Titanic, but was really just a love story set against the backdrop of the sinking of the Titanic. And this movie could have told some story. It could have done anything with the love story here. It's interesting. I think a lot of people can identify with one or the other character who kind of lost touch and still want to fall in love and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And like, it doesn't at all. It's like we're in hour three of the film and it's still plodding along about where's this building sized living, breathing creature in a city. Like that's some sort of huge mystery, you know? And like, I don't understand what we did with all that time.
Well, the creature got a total of 11 minutes on screen. Somebody went and calculated that.
Right.
So he didn't have a whole lot of, screen time. Wow. It was often his taint that we were looking at, you know?
Yes. What I kind of wanted to do was work with you, Scott, on capturing out the scene where he walks over Hank Azaria with the camera. He looks up, and I wanted to capture that moment out and then do a pixelation, have it pixelated when he looks up. Yeah. Just to see, just to add that little
big old gun
sensor in. Tank.
Yeah. Unnecessary sensor.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Perfect use of that.
So there was a time during the mid 90s and a little further in that every summer we expected a popcorn thriller, right? And this came out May the 20th.
Giant monster movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every summer there were multiples of them. You know, remember when Deep Impact and Armageddon came out at the same time.
Yeah. And who was better at that than Roland Emmerich? I mean, because I always knew going into these films.
Jerry Bruckheimer, yeah. Michael Bay,
yeah, hold on. But
yeah, even Steven Spielberg,
whoever.
Yeah, but
who's fourth or fifth best? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. That's why I feel like this felt like his first attempt at a monster movie, because it seemed very
sophomoric.
Like, I'm experimenting with, okay, let's, you know, instead of having a monster movie, I actually don't like the fact that they felt like they had to do, well, the monster is kind of a side story, really the relationship of Matthew Broderick and unknown 90s woman who I thought we'd seen in a bunch of stuff, but now I can't think of what else I've
Rhea
seen.
Rhea Pitillo, is that her name?
Yeah, exactly. Household name right there, yes.
Right.
Like, they put the relationship as the A story, and really Godzilla's the B story.
Yeah. He's not only the B story.
The kids are kind of the A story.
Yeah.
The Godzilla kids.
Yeah, yeah, no, they kind of are. And also, I have so many questions about, there's some plot holes, some problems.
What?
That this movie made. Yes. Plenty. And I'll give you a little bit of that. Well, you know what? Before that, let me give you a little bit of trivia so I can get these out of the way. So they were all under contract, including Patillo, Broderick, and Jean Renault. The professional.
Fantastic.
I love him. I don't care what he does. I love that guy.
Yeah.
They were each under contract for a total of three Godzilla films. First installment earned $379 million during its theatrical run. That ensured a sequel would at least be considered by TriStar. They own the rights to the franchise. They called on Centronopolis or whatever to begin pre-production work on a sequel, which is tentatively named Godzilla 2. Pretty creative.
I do like the irony of you calling Centronopolis about a movie where they keep getting Matthew Broderick's weird Greek name wrong.
Oh, by the way, his character's name too. I noticed this, the visual effects guy, that was his real name, right?
Was it
Totopoulos?
Totopoulos. Yeah.
And Totopoulos is the guy. He was the third judge on the Face Off.
Oh, no way.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't watch that, but that's actually kind
of
cool.
Not the Lord of the Rings lady, not the weird gothy long-haired dude, but the cool French guy. Or I guess he was a frequent fourth person they would bring in. Oh, anyway, I'm sorry. Please continue.
All right. No, it's fine. What was I going to say?
You're talking about Centropolis.
So they were going to call this movie Godzilla 2. It didn't happen. There was no enthusiasm to move forward, apparently. So the franchise just sort of allowed to expire. But here's the thing. I have the perfect way to fix this movie. Even now, they could do this now with an edit and you're done. Don't call it, call it Godzilla if you want, but call it Godzilla, because the only reason you do that is because the Japanese old man who loves a lighter, apparently, and will start talking no matter what. I feel like he was being threatened with that lighter. I don't know what that was about.
Right. Exactly.
Really weird. But when Jean Renault is shown on the lighter and he gets him to say Gojira three times.
Gojira.
Gojira. Yeah. Make that the basis for why you call him that. And acknowledge in the film that there is this other legend of Godzilla. Maybe that there were even films of Godzilla. And then have this be a separate thing, like, oh, well, this is not Godzilla, but we're going to, you know, this is what the Japanese, it reminds them of that, even though it isn't that.
Yes, this movie takes place in a universe that doesn't have Godzilla already.
Right.
And that's the mistake.
That's a mistake. If it, I agree.
If it just referenced itself, if it was just, it had a level of self-awareness, like even that these things have happened, like that Jurassic Park was a movie 6 years ago or something, then it gives it so much more interesting things for reporters to say and for people on the street to say. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like,
and that, and yes. Toho's already kind of addressed this. They've kept this in the lore of Godzilla, but now they call him Zilla. So this being that we called Godzilla was actually Zilla, which is a totally different thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, what is more late 90s than abbreviating something down to Zilla?
Whatever helps them sleep at night. Whatever helps them sleep at night.
They totes do it all the time today.
Totes, dude.
Stop trying to make totes a thing.
Too late.
It's been a thing and left.
It's been a thing and left all its shit and
it
left.
It ran by like a Godzilla screaming.
You guys noticed the Mayor Ebert and Assistant Gene?
Yes. So did Ebert.
Yeah,
they were so subtle with that. Like, even going so far as to have them do thumbs up and thumbs down all the time.
Yeah,
and,
it was real dumb. So apparently that was all just an effort by Emmerich and Devlin to give them cheese for them getting so much heat for their previous movie, Stargate, which we saw recently, Independence Day. Neither Ebert or Siskel loved those and ripped on them quite a bit. So they thought,
and surprise, they ripped. They didn't think much of Godzilla either.
Oh, no, they freaking hated this. Also, Gene Siskel died the next year, but anyway, yeah.
Why were Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich busy referencing real-world movie critics?
Petty. It's petty.
You have a lot of
screen time on a mean retaliation joke.
Yeah, it's weird. I think it's a waste of their time. Like, I don't know why they did it.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it certainly didn't do anything to improve the film.
Show him.
Yeah.
We're going to put them in this movie and they're not going to be very good.
Yeah. And it's just
a French accent.
It's very nice. It's very petty though, right? Like, ultimate in petty retaliation or whatever. And it's not really in service of the film. There was one line that the Ebert character said that made me laugh. Other than that, I didn't need those two. They were just there for noise. And
they could have been funny. They could have been interesting. There could have been a fourth subplot about politicians reacting and how politicians, you know, do and don't do things right in these kinds of events.
Yeah.
And like, they had tons of fertile territory to plant those seeds, right? Like, they had them go to this like meeting of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or something, and then they have them at some kind of strange media facility. Like, there was stuff there. I mean, them in the helicopter, when you first see them, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a complete movie. But no, it's not a complete movie at all. It doesn't have like lots of good meat on the bones.
No, it just has 11 minutes of a 98 era.
A big old pile of fish.
Yeah, a whole lot of fish and a taint. Exactly.
Zilla taint.
This is what's weird about this is literally, and it kind of took me off my, it blew me away for a minute, but this is like 11 years after Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which is a weird way to frame the timing on this. Because 10 years is nothing.
But Matthew Broderick doesn't look like he's aged a day.
No, he looks the same in this. He does now. He looks like a toe now. I don't know if you've seen him recently.
Only because he let his hair go gray. I'm telling you, that guy could color his hair and lose 5 pounds, and you would still say, oh, wow, he's like...
I like that general jab as well, and lose 5 pounds.
Yeah, throw that in there.
Big old fatty.
You a little extra.
Well, actors lose weight. Also.
Yeah, no, they do. They gain and lose. That's what they do. But anyway, the scene that I perhaps appreciated the most in light of the fact that this is only 11 years after that movie was the elevator music in the scene where if you listen closely, they're in the elevator, or he's in the elevator, and you hear Donka Shane being played. Which he famously lip-synced in that Ferris Bueller's Day Off scene, that memorable scene.
By the way, I really enjoyed the fun of the music in this. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It took me long.
Oh, it was all right. I mean, the soundtrack was ridiculously over the top. It was fine.
Okay,
that
give
Puff
me your
Daddy song had the wallflowers were on there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Give me your 80s jack of all trades teenage boy. If you can only have one to lead your
just
your
give him to imaginary. You.
Right.
I want to know. I want to know. Are you a Broderick? Are you a Michael J. Fox? Are you a Patrick Dempsey? Who's your guy?
During the day, I was definitely a Michael J. Fox, but as time has progressed, I think it's probably going to have to be Broderick. I mean, I've enjoyed it more of the years.
Really? I'm going to say, what's his name from Stargate? Blacklist.
Spader?
Oh, Spader, yeah.
Wow. Spader. I don't think in his teenage years he had any range at all.
No, he didn't. He was not great. But I think
in
retrospect,
gotta play the dick in all the John Hughes movies.
Like I would have been fine if he was in charge here in this movie. I think that'd have been fine. I mean, it would have been a little bit weird. He's a lot more adult.
Would have been weird. He could have been the worm scientist, mm-hmm. and then the ex girlfriend could have been Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
And
is it Gyllenhaal or Gyllenhaal? Do we decide?
Hall.
Is it Gyllenhaal?
Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's like a GIF.
Yeah, it's like
it's more like a
go geeking hall.
We've been doing Film Sack for a decade. Uh-huh. We're gonna have to agree to disagree on some of these how they want to pronounce it names.
No, like no. Scott even played a thing on TMS. He played.
I know.
Gyllenhaal saying how you pronounce her name.
Yeah,
I know.
And actually, I hate to expand the trope, but it might have actually been Jake Gyllenhaal. I can't remember.
Yeah,
which
see,
one it really
yeah.
was.
See, you did it. You've proved my whole thing all this time.
I know.
Later.
I hate that, but it's. I can't remember who did the.
All right. So nobody says Gyllenhaal's name correctly, and here's a video where he talks about it. Hold on, we're just gonna do this. Okay, this is on Conan.
We've known each other a while, and we're very good friends. Some say best friends. And
I'm gonna skip ahead.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. It is a Swedish name, is it not?
It is a Swedish name.
So shouldn't it be like Gyllenhaal?
Oh my god.
Gyllenhaal.
The only two places that is pronounced correctly, my last name like you did just now, is in Sweden and in IKEA.
IKEA.
I really have to say that.
Oh, because IKEA is the Sweden. That's how we know Sweden here right. in America.
Oh, that is 100% the audio clip that I was attributing to
to his sister.
Maggie. Yes.
So Gyllenhaal is the way to say it in your native thing, but now he's going to tell us how to do it here.
So. Jeez, you know my last name.
Right. I mean, I'm half Swedish, you know, but we're pretty great people, and you know, we come with simple instructions, and we seem really great, and then. At the end of it, your fingers are sore.
That sounds
Gyllenhaal.
Oh, so good.
Doesn't this make you feel
my people?
Gyllenhaal.
Don't.
It is,
don't. We can do this the whole
if
time.
If I keep in the street.
I have to help you with it. It is actually Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal.
There it is.
See, it's nothing like we even think. So we're just going to say
We're gonna say Gyllenhaal, and I'm telling you, this is what we've been doing on FilmSec. This is how we roll. Okay, we make the names sound the way the names sound to everybody else. We are the people of the people.
Okay, fair enough. Also, they used 2,000 foam fish to make a fish pile. I wanted to make sure that's my favorite piece of trivia in the entire thing. 2,000 foam fish were made to create the fish pile, which is impossible not to mention. Oh, and then Dick Van Dyke was considered for the role of Mayor Ebert, which sounds ridiculous, and I don't know why that would even be in there. All right.
It's for that dance number that they took out.
Oh, you know why I think it's bullcrap? Here's why. It says this is the exact way that it is. I copied and pasted it right out of IMDb. This is why you've just trust IMDb only so far. This is the way it reads. Dick Van Dyke were considered for the role of Mayor Ebert.
Were considered.
Yeah. Like those are three dudes, Dick, Van, and Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke.
I feel like I've already said this a little bit, but this is the worst trivia I've ever seen for a film. Like the worst written and compiled and collected trivia ever.
And there's tons of it, and it's all bad.
Yeah, and in IMDb, there is literally a piece of trivia that for some reason editors have allowed to stand that has nothing to do with the movie and is about 9/11. Mm-hmm. It's the weirdest thing. Like this this trivia repeats itself. There's tons and tons of sections that are just copy paste from higher in the list.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I was curious about this. You know, I had the DVD which came out before. Yeah. Right. Well, we do, but it came. The DVD was released before September 11th in 2001, but we do know that after the events, a lot of movies were edited, and they took out any showing of the towers.
Wind towers.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for a while, we didn't. It was just too close. Just too much of a reminder.
Yeah, and, I remember that. It was mostly stuff that was like in production, like this. The what do you call it on The Sopranos on HBO used to have it in their intro, and so they changed the intro.
Yeah, yeah. Like there was. And so I was curious if this suffered that at any point.
Yeah,
there were stories about people who had scripts that had one of the World Trade Center towers being destroyed or being injured somehow, mm-hmm. who had to change their scripts, like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But this movie has only beauty shots for the World Trade Center buildings. And so I could see just leaving it. Like it's totally right. fine.
Yeah, I agree.
If on the other hand, the Chrysler Building or the Flatiron Building or Madison Square Garden had been the subject of a terrorist attack, right, this movie would have been in trouble.
Oh my gosh, the freaking Chrysler Building. That thing took a shot, man.
It took a hit.
Yeah, that was very Nolan Emmerich, though. That was like, or Roland, not Nolan. His whole thing is just destroying a whole bunch of shit.
What did Chrysler Building do to you?
And that's what people remember about Independence Day. So the fact that they had some of that going on here was probably good for fans of that stuff. But the Two Towers thing, I remember the most prominent piece of sort of entertainment-y news thing was that this Sam Raimi Spider-Man, the first one, was supposed to have some big. I mean, no, I had a trailer where he was like webbed between the two.
It was the movie poster too that had him sitting on one of them.
Yeah, right. And he caught a helicopter between the two towers or something like a spider would.
Which is using them as kind of like tools, which felt wrong. But also, I remember specifically that they crammed together the end thing where he perches with the American flag as a response to the events of 9/11, like that somehow they believed audiences would like that sort of like rah-rah jingoism, which, you know, I guess we did
sort of. I mean, we did it in unison, so maybe that helped. Like it seemed like everybody was sort of in on the deal, but
I never saw that film.
Yeah. I was trying to find a clip to play the bear, but I can't find it. So there's what's a Seinfeld
the Simpsons,
Seinfeld connection.
That's right, Seinfeld bass.
Yeah, who's the Seinfeld connection? Do you guys know?
Wasn't Hank Azaria on an episode of Seinfeld?
Oh,
now?
He probably was. I hadn't even thought of that. Probably was.
Oh, the fact Ebert.
Nope. Oh, maybe.
No.
Michael Lerner.
That's funny. We're going to name everybody. Oh, and remember that time Broderick was on the Seinfeld?
You know what? You're like, not wrong. I think that Ebert guy may have been. That's funny.
I think he was. Yeah. Like not obviously not Newman, but on a different like a.
Yeah. There's something he was on. I think you're right. But the person I'm thinking of is Vicki Lewis, who plays the redhead. Whatchamahooch there, the doctor.
Whatchamahooch.
I think I like you.
Yeah, that one.
You don't have a girlfriend? Yeah. Are you sure?
She kind of annoys me.
Hey, I'll tell you what was odd was seeing all the in the tanker, the Japanese tanker, when they were doing I guess maybe it was the cannery boat. There was several actors there, which we probably recognize from other movies.
Yeah. Well, no, back to the redhead. She was also on. It's funny because she's someone you get confused with the redhead from News Radio.
It is her. That is her on News Radio. Oh yeah.
Okay, then it's the one you get confused with the redhead from Veronica's Closet.
Oh, it is her.
Is that her?
That's not the same. No, no way.
Hold on, Vicki Lewis.
Oh my God! I can't believe I can't remember the redhead. The redhead who just recently got into all that trouble because she did a photo where she was holding up Trump's head.
Also on Seinfeld.
She was on Seinfeld too. And
Kathy Griffin.
Kathy Griffin.
Kathy Griffin. Thank you.
Kathy. Oh my God!
And she was the secretary on another one of those must see TV Thursday night things, and she would make the joke in her comedy routine that she gets confused with Vicki Lewis all the time.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing it too because I can't remember which one was on Veronica's Closet and which one was
radio. You may be. I think actually, if it's right, she's not on Veronica's Closet. It's someone else. Yeah. That's somebody else on Veronica.
That might have been Kathy Griffin then.
Maybe.
But she was the one who was on. Okay, so but she was the one who was on News Radio?
Yes, she was on News Radio, and that was my first memory ever. But she played this really annoying, I want to say George's girlfriend for like a two-episode arc or something. Really obnoxious. So the minute I saw her, all my like PTSD kicked in about what I think of her from that.
Yeah, she was Ada the secretary.
Oh, right. And she was really obnoxious, right?
George gets a secretary, and then they kind of fall in love. And, yes.
They make out and have sex behind the desk, and George is screaming. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This is when he was, and he got in huge trouble for that because she got more money than him because he had told her. Because she says, "I want a raise," and in the thick of passion, he goes,
"Right,
you can have it. You can have it or whatever." And then, okay, now I've got it all figured out.
You know,
right?
That's. I really do hate the more the Fisher Boat actors didn't get like a little more or something because Al Long.
He was there for a hot second. That sucked.
Yeah, he was cutting up some fish. He was in Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, Big Trouble in Little China, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. So many great things.
He's the guy with
Our walrus guy. Yes.
Yeah.
I saw him pop up and went, "Oh, I forgot he was in this. Okay, let's go." And that
was
it.
I was like, "Oh, he has a part to play." Nope.
Chick in the bucket. Chick in the bucket.
Well, I think Kevin Dunn has probably been on Seinfeld a few times. The dude has been on everything. Like, he's one of these guys that you see.
I love Kevin Dunn.
And you can't name a specific thing that he was on, but you know he's been in everything.
Well, except for like, okay, so the two that come to mind are Veep, obviously. He's Veep. And then, and he's great on Veep. Oh my gosh.
He is great. He's the one who's just so fed up with all of it.
Yeah. It's a shock he's even working at the White House. But then there's what was the other one? And I always remember from Transformers, he's LaBeouf's dad in that. Kevin Dunn's great. That guy's a national treasure. Great. Yeah. Keep him around.
He really is. I'm looking to see. Oh, he also played in the Godzilla series. There was a TV series.
Was this the cartoon?
He continued the character. It doesn't say.
Oh, you're talking about the there was a spinoff from
the cartoon, right?
Yeah, it was a cartoon,
1998
right?
To like 2000.
What was it called?
Godzilla the series is what it was called.
The series. Oh yeah, there it is.
Oh, speaking of which, did we ever go back and talk about Godzilla's atomic breath? That's the laser kind of thing. That it's not really a laser, but it's more focused than fire.
Again, though, I have a lot of memories of watching Godzilla shows as a kid, and he had in some incarnations a laser eyes. He could shoot lasers out of his eyes, and sometimes they were like little laser bullets, and sometimes
laser
beams.
The only photo we've been able to find of that is the cartoon is where he has laser eyes. By the way, Kevin Dunn, third episode of Seinfeld, he's a childhood friend who keeps calling Jerry to hang out together.
Right, they go to lunch.
And he has to do the breakup.
Yeah, they go to lunch and Jerry has to do the friend breakup. Yep.
There's a competing battle of conversations here between Seinfeld connections.
Go back to laser breath. Go back to a talk of laser breath. Sorry, go back.
But then... like forgetting the eye beams for a minute because it's stupid. Like the main thing that everybody has seen Godzilla do from in the 50s and 60s and 70s is open his mouth and shoot like a flamethrower.
Yeah.
Like that. That's just a thing that Godzilla does. And they could have depicted that instead of having this thing where he's like, he's got bad breath and he manages to breathe over an open flame, which ignites.
Oh, is that what it was? Because I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
Okay, I was attributing that to just like dragon fire breath. Okay, so he did.
And that was actually a response to the fans because the fans got really mad that Godzilla was not going to be portrayed in that fashion. And so they added that. He added that.
Well, hold on a minute. Why is his breath flammable? I don't understand.
Because Roland Emmerich made more sense than a fire breathing lizard.
Fish oil is very flammable.
I'll give you that the original Godzilla makes very little sense, right?
Yeah.
He should be highly radioactive. He should leave a trail of radioactivity everywhere he goes. Like, he should not be able to breathe fire. That makes no sense.
Well, the Japanese cannery guy had all kinds of Geiger counter going off, but nobody else seemed to. I don't understand that.
Yeah,
that was weird.
That's a good question.
I interrupted Randy.
There's so many things missing there. It's ridiculous. But do you guys prefer Hero Godzilla or Bad Guy Godzilla? Because there's a little bit of like Rocky moments for me in some of the really older Godzilla movies where he's kind of the hero because he's a monster, but he's pretty chill most times. And then another monster comes in to kind of challenge him, and he's like, "Oh, I'm going to save the city."
Well, I prefer
I like the hero Godzilla.
I do too, yeah. And I also like it over this because this is just dumb lizard. Like, he doesn't have any. He's just got good instincts for where to put his eggs and how to defend himself. That's right. It.
And he's like this also kind of gets you between. Do you prefer fast zombies or slow zombies? Well, I prefer my Godzilla to lumber. You know, and this one is very fast.
Yeah, I don't mind. I don't know. They did it pretty well in that last one where it's like he's not an intentional hero. Like, he's not going, "I'm here to save you from the other monster." He doesn't do that.
He's the lesser of two evils.
But he'll come in there and he'll fight, but then he'll leave a mess and then he'll leave. So he's still a problem. Like, that I kind of like, you know?
It's like, I like it because it's the idea between, do you prefer chaos or do you prefer the monster you know?
Yeah.
Right. He is the monster who will fight for your honor. He is the hero that you've been dreaming of.
So I have this theory, and forgive me if this is like someone's thesis that's been published or something, but you have filmmakers, you have artists in the aftermath of World War II in Japan, mm-hmm. and they're part of a nationwide culture that is in the process of disavowing Imperial Japan and remaking itself. And it's being rebuilt by the Western countries. And these artists are, they're torn, right? Because they have their lifetime of experience. And they have an experience where from out of, you know, nowhere, this great amount of destruction came to their country. And they're grappling with it because they're also trying to be a different country. And so Godzilla is this wonderful expression of all of that, where he gets to be a nuclear bomb that comes slowly, slowly enough for you to see it and address it and do something about it, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's so in my theory, Godzilla is a sort of natural artistic response to Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yeah.
And so in that way, Godzilla starts out as the bad, the like 100% bad thing. He's just bad. He's just like a figment of nuclear weaponry, and you know, like, you're supposed to be afraid of him and you're supposed to stop him, right? You're all of these things. But then along the way, once you have that character established, like, Godzilla is more than just a figment. It's an actual creature that has motivations. You know, like, you have this second generation where it reverses, and now your audience identifies with the monster for some reason.
Right.
And that's freaking weird.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That is just bizarre.
Very odd.
And
yep.
I can't think of another good example of that. And I'm sure there are, but of, like, where you have this complete role reversal. And now it's like, now we're not afraid of nuclear bombs anymore. We're afraid of alien invasions. And so we're going to use the nuclear bomb against to repel that invader, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, but everything in life informs art, right? Life informs art, art informs life, and all of that. It's just one of those examples of real life that had such an impact. Think about it. Like, the world's first use of nuclear technology to create a massive wake of death. That's just never happened before. And to do that, and then to try to recover from that, you have to deal with it. Like, all of the implications, both psychological and physical, and do that for decades and decades. And the fact that it manifests itself in so much of Japanese art and culture and anime and stories is always been really fascinating to me. But yeah, no, you're right. Like, now we think of nukes now and we go, you know, well, that's what you do in Aliens, to nuke the planet and make sure the aliens don't come back. It's the only way to be sure, you know, like, we use them more like these fun little sci-fi tools. But back in the day, and I don't know, like, I think it's impossible to not have something that massive happen and not have it inform your culture for maybe ever. You know what I mean?
For sure. It's just so strange how quickly the Godzilla as a figment of that destruction that you can deal with, that you can see and reason with in your own mind. It's amazing how quickly that turns around and becomes a whole character.
Right.
Like I say, I just can't come up with another good example. of, you know, like, I don't know, in the US, there was an evil bald eagle and we turned it into a representative of the nation. You know what I mean? Like, there's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird
I still think we made a mistake. Should have been the turkey.
Well, that's what Ben Franklin wanted.
Turkeys are majestic AF.
Did he really want a turkey?
Tasty.
He wanted a turkey.
Yeah, he wanted the turkey to be the bird. And everybody's like, really, dude? Dude.
He was,
Dude.
Interesting.
Put that
fella.
Kite down, brother. You've suffered too many strikes.
Yeah, no kidding.
Too many lightning strikes to the keys, yeah. If you know what I mean.
I have a funny note I wrote in here. It was very late when I watched this. I wrote, pretty ballsy to take this series and rewrite it like that, make it a nuke lizard and all.
I think I'll go to bed now.
Yeah, I think I'm too tired.
Oh, that's funny. We got some pretty good. We got a lot of feedback on Twitter about this movie. A lot of people love this movie, even though they know it's not technically the greatest movie in the world. It's still a lot of fun. It's a fun movie.
Yeah.
And one person tweeted to me, and I can't remember their name. I'm not gonna call them out, but they basically said, "Oh, I went to this piece of turd at the midnight showing, and I fell asleep." And I'm like, "You can't blame the movie for falling asleep if you went to the midnight movie. I mean, sure, it could have been a turd, but it also could have been you were tired."
Yeah,
this reminds me during the midnight release of Watchmen, and it was right. I was tired. It was midnight.
Friends,
I'm old.
I want to make sure we say here, if you haven't watched this film yet and you have Netflix, watch
Hurry.
It because it's going off of Netflix on May 1st, 2019.
Yeah.
And secondly, a bunch of movie theaters in this is a PSA I'm going to do real quick. A bunch of movie theaters in this country and probably in other countries are doing a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie marathon leading up to Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
And I just want to tell you, don't do that. Like,
yeah, you're not
going to
make it.
Don't go watch 22 movies in a row before the movie you want to see.
Yeah.
That is not a good idea. At this point, if you haven't yet sort of revisited your favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, you don't need to. You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Get some sleep before you go see the new one.
Yeah. I guarantee you if there's any thread that you want to see, I guarantee you there's a video on YouTube that outlines it for you.
Oh, yeah. You'll get a summary. Go get the Cliff Notes for sure. Yeah.
Right. And I'd say if you haven't seen Captain Marvel, Ant-Man and the Wasp, any of the movies that come between Infinity War and Endgame, those are the ones you probably need to focus on. Show up for the last 4 hours of the marathon.
Yeah.
Six hours.
Yeah. I just want to make this point again. So when episode 3 was coming out, I went to a movie marathon where you watched episodes 4, 5, 6, 1, and 2 in a row, then episode 3 of Star Wars, and that was 1,000 hours long because the re-released versions of the Star Wars movies are really long, and it was horrible. I hated episode 3, and I've actually only ever seen it once.
Seriously, that was the reason you hated episode 3?
yes, that is my point, is if everybody is way sleep deprived when they see Avengers Endgame, they're going to kind of dislike the movie.
Or if you're, it's not so much sleep deprivation, it's just MCU overload.
Just like fatigue.
If you've watched too much of that stuff. Like, everybody wants to do a weekend marathon of the director's cuts of the Lord of the Rings movies. I'm all for that fandom. I think that's great. But man, by the time you get halfway through Two Towers, you want to kill yourself. It's just too much.
Right.
It's overwhelming.
I've done that by the way. And also I'm working on a Fast and the Furious movie marathon and how to watch all of those over a weekend that doesn't leave you hating, you know, because familiarity breeds contempt. Yes. But there's also just the tediousness of, you know, doing the same thing for 11 hours straight.
Right.
Lord of the Rings extended versions, by the way, that's a total of 11 hours. Fast and the Furious is probably more like 20 hours.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, maybe we're going to skip the second and third ones.
No,
like,
absolutely watching, skip that second one.
Are you watching anything before Endgame? Because this will be the last episode of FilmSec we do before we see Endgame.
I already have.
I guess technically not because our next episode is a watch along, but we'll talk about that later.
I already have. I watched a couple of movies. And as you know, I freaking hated the stupid Thanos one. I don't even remember the name of it.
The stupid Thanos one, he calls it.
Yeah. Yes. Part one of the movie you're going to see this week?
Yeah.
Infinity War. I hated that movie. So I'm looking for all of these other threads, like what, you know, how can I enjoy Endgame? Because whatever I did before Infinity War wasn't the proper prep. But also the movie just has the stupidest ending ever in a movie. Right. But anyway, my thinking here is that, you know, set your expectations low and then you'll be okay. And that's how do you do that with Marvel movies? Because they're all so exciting. And so I've just been like revisiting the older ones. Like, you don't need to watch Spider-Man Homecoming before.
No, but I'm definitely going to do a refresh with, I will watch Infinity War again. I will watch Black Panther again, and I will watch Ant-Man and the Wasp again before I see Infinity War.
Yeah,
I feel like Doctor Strange Thor Ragnarok. Doctor Strange and Thor Ragnarok.
I just love Thor Ragnarok, so I probably will end up watching
that. I'm not gonna watch squat before I go in.
Good. Yeah, right. You don't need to. I mean, honestly, yeah, I watched Infinity War a week and a half ago or something again. I love that movie. Randy's crazy. I don't know where he's coming from on that. It's a good movie. And then I'm ready. Let's do this. Let's just have this movie.
I did go back and I saw there was the Infinity Gauntlet comic was on sale, and I bought that and I read through it night before last.
Yeah, that is such a good book.
So I could be prepared to go, that's not what they did in the book.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it? Because I love that.
Yeah. Oh, the book is so good. The art is just worth it for the price of admission. Yeah. It's just amazing.
Oh, it's good stuff. I mean, I don't ever get hung up on the comics different than what they do in the movies, because I left that dog at the hitch 10 years ago.
I don't either, but I think it's fun to be that guy.
You like to be that guy. All right.
Yeah.
The last frustration I had with that was the organic web shooters, and since then I've been fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Let it go. It's okay for all these universes and different things and different interpretations to exist.
Oh, it was a great day though when Tobey Maguire stopped excreting his own web. For real, that's a great day when that ended. Done.
Yes, it really was.
No more excretion of your own bodily fluids in the form. Ah, gross.
Fine.
It's gross.
How many people have been complaining about that for years? Spider-Man should have webs under his pits. No, he shouldn't.
What's the one where he shoots him out of his butt? Some like Far Side or something?
Well, I don't know. I've never heard of that. Right. Spider-Man shoots a web out of his
butt.
There's
some joke somewhere where Spider-Man is shooting webs out of his butt like a real spider.
Sounds like a Far Side. That seems like something Gary Larson would
do. I don't know that one.
Yeah. But if you're, this is just quick thinking here. If you're somebody, a bad guy, and Spider-Man is about to, you know, he always shoots someone in the face to shut him up, you know, with his web or whatever to keep him quiet or to incapacitate them. Would you rather have that come out of a, you know, that's like some material made in a little science gun, or out of the body of Tobey Maguire? You don't want Tobey's goo.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
You just don't want Toby's goo. We can all agree on that.
There's one thing to take away from the movie Godzilla. It is.
Right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, speaking of gross things, does anyone have a guess as what I found gross? Because I found something very specifically gross in this movie, and it wasn't any of the special effects, just to give you a hint.
Did it have to do with Hank Azaria?
Yes. Let's see if you're on it here.
I think, there was several moments that I remember seeing and saying, oh, Scott's not going to enjoy that.
It was any time he ate, because he ate loud and so smacky.
He did, and he would talk while he was eating at the restaurant.
Oh, my gosh.
He is this character. I don't know if it's how Hank Azaria really is, but his mouth is open more than Corey Haim's mouth is open during the duration of this film.
Especially after Godzilla walked over him and he's all like,
at the very end.
Did you guys like you were talking about Taco Bell earlier? Do you notice their Blockbuster stuff everywhere, man?
The background.
Yeah, yep. People are into it.
It had some Swatch in the background. It was very steeped in the 90s.
Yeah, it was. And I think my favorite image though of the entire thing, I put it in our Slack, is they have a radar set up for when they're tracking the monster through the city, and they have a fish icon where the big pile of fish is, and I just think that's great. You know, these are all professional military people. I think you could have probably had a little red dot to indicate where to go, but they went through the trouble of making a fully formed fish.
I love the idea that the radar application has an icon library that someone was scrolling around in. Right. What are we going to put there? Let's see.
We got Wi-Fi symbol. We've got stop sign.
I put the fish there. Can you make it bigger?
Yeah, how big can this fish be? Because it's a big pile of fish.
It should be a big pile of fish. Make it bigger. Bigger.
All right, Dunaway, I cut you off before. You were going to say something.
I forget. I don't know. It's not important.
I'm sure it was great. It was probably
this movie makes so many references to Jurassic Park that I'm shocked there wasn't a chase in a Jeep. Like, that's the only thing missing
from
this movie otherwise.
Or a lawyer getting eaten off a toilet. That would have been cool. Because remember that in Jurassic Park?
I think they knew that there was no way, because Jurassic Park had such an impact on us. And this was, was it part two was out? And did it come out in 96?
No, same year, 98, I think.
Okay, so they knew they were in, they knew there was no way they wouldn't draw comparisons, right? So I think they leaned into it.
But the whole escape from Madison Square Garden is flat out Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah. I mean, raptors and everything else.
And this is following an hour of the rain at night, which is also super Jurassic Park. I don't know why the rain machine, like... The first scene in New York is on a dock where an old dude is going fishing in the rain. That became the famous trailer, the first trailer that you ever saw for the movie.
So much water towards him and stuff.
Yeah.
But you could see the rain machine. You could see it in the, like, when they first show the dock from behind, I'm like,
there's the rain machine.
I didn't see it because I just didn't want to.
Kind of like this movie. No, the rain was a little much. It was a little over the top. I kept thinking of Minority Report and what Dunaway might think it all means, that there was rain. Do you think there's a secret meaning to the rain, Brian Dunaway?
Absolutely not. This movie never once promised any symbolism. None. So I had no expectations.
Now, I got a question, though.
Minority Report pretended to say, oh, we're fixing to do something deep. This movie never even went deep.
Well, here's my math question. He told those military advisors before they said that he leaked stuff to the press and kicked him out of there unceremoniously. He said to them, if we don't do it now, this creature is going to lay up to 12 eggs.
Yeah. Way underestimated.
Was it ever acknowledged that he way underestimated, or was that just a thing he threw out there and then I wasn't supposed to focus on it so much? Because when there were hundreds of them, I went, no, well, right. He said 12, and I couldn't.
I think that was intentional to keep us, you know, to not have us, because if we said, oh, there's going to be hundreds of eggs, when we saw the hundreds of eggs, we'd be like, that's not impressive. So I think that was an intentional setup.
Okay. So he was supposed to have gotten that wrong, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right. It's just when you actually see the eggs and you're like, I guess there's no Godzilla anymore, because the body mass, the entire body mass of the lizard is now here.
Yeah. No, it was on the chin. Stupid. I'm telling you, he's like those frogs that have the eggs in his mouth. That's where they're all.
Is that he's been just carrying?
Yeah, that's
the
reason why his chin's so big.
That explains the chin.
Oh, that explains it. Okay.
It is such a hand-wavy.
Right. He looks like Deathwing.
He does look. Oh, you're right. He totally looks like Deathwing.
Yeah.
And that was intentional, too, because Roland Emmerich, or was it? I forget. Someone had intentionally made the chin extra big because they liked.
But
Topopolis.
Topopolis is original sketches. Yeah.
He said that he was inspired by Bajira. Is that right? In the Jungle Book?
With the big jaw. Yeah, Bagheera. Yeah, Bajira.
Bajira.
You're going Godzilla.
Gojira. See, I was confusing. Yeah. Gojira.
Bajira.
Yeah, Stan Winston actually had a design that looked a lot more like the traditional Japanese Godzilla, but then Totopoulos came back with a sketch of like,
oh yeah, let me show you something.
Super chin, long lizard.
Well, when you're in, this is a theory of mine. When you're in the 90s, I'll bet you your design, your hothead of design is to be different, because the old Japanese movies and the Godzilla design in general, kind of a big fatty. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
Like he's kind of got like narrow top. He's pear shaped and it's kind of awkward and dumb looking. And so I'm sure in the 90s rad 90s era with glowy green logos, they wanted to go like, well, this thing needs to be like fast and sleek and
this
cool.
This Godzilla needs to be wearing a no fear shirt. Right. It needs to be.
Yeah, and that's why I like the new one, the 2014 one, and the one coming up. They just went ahead and embraced the fatty again.
But he's not like fat. He's like muscle fat.
Right, he's been doing shrugs at the gym, and so he's got this huge trap.
Yeah. Burpees,
mountain climbers. Yeah, yeah.
Ugh, all those things sound bad right now.
Bulging abs.
I thought this Godzilla design was perfect. That's one of the elements of the movie where I'm like, yeah, they nailed it. This was scary. It was enough like a dinosaur that you could have all of those dinosaur thoughts and you could understand things like them referring to it initially as maybe an Allosaurus that survived billions of years.
Right.
But at the same time, it wasn't just a flat out dinosaur with tiny little T-Rex arms or something. Like it had these like incredible eyes, like really expressive eyes.
Yeah.
And when you put it all together, I was genuinely afraid. Like that it was great. I was just freaked out at how they could not maintain the size of the thing.
Yeah.
If you go back and take some screenshots of different, like almost like two-thirds or three-quarters of the thing, because you never really see it all. But if you just like look at it and try to size it up, how tall is it here? How big is it here?
Yeah.
It varies between like 80 feet and 800 feet. It's insane how different this thing looks.
Yeah, they weren't consistent with their proportions. That was a weird thing. My body just went like pushed out of I think I got Tourette's. It's coming. It's happening.
To top proportions.
But yeah, like they usually have somebody to worry about that sort of stuff, and it felt like they didn't hire that guy. He wasn't there. I was curious.
Yeah, I had noticed it as well, but I was trying to figure out if it was. Yeah. I was trying to figure out if it was if he was still mutating, because it implied that it was a recent event. It recently came to be, and it was continuing to grow. But I started down that path, and I was like, I'm just watching Gojira.
They could have explained it. They could have made sure that it was big before laying the eggs, and someone said, wow, it looks smaller after laying the eggs, like that kind of thing.
But he's not a fish. He really beefed up, you know? Just
he ate a lot of fish, and he ate it like a dog bowl. That's what I liked about it. The way he was eating that thing.
There was one fish, by the way, hanging in a basketball hoop that was still flopping hours after it would have been without water.
Yeah. And you could tell it was somebody with a string or a stick or something up there too.
I grew up on a river. My parents' house was on a body of water that you could fish out of. And I'm telling you, I spent two decades of my life pulling fish out of that thing and cleaning them and cooking them. And fish will flop for days after you pull them out of water. It's insane.
Yeah.
Well, fish will flop. It's what they do.
Yeah, you watch out. Those fish. Yeah. They're going to flop.
What's he doing now? He's flopping still. Hit him with a paddle.
Yeah, this is what you do. All right. I have clips. Let's do clips.
Okay. One more quick what the heck is or two more quick what the hecks that I have in my notes. The babies, him basically arriving pregnant and being able to deposit babies who are also pregnant.
yeah, I like that idea. It's like,
okay, come on now.
Well, hold on. That's asexual.
The only piece of all of the biology that I'm going to buy in on.
Well, but seriously, the asexual reproduction. Yeah, the asexual reproduction is that very thing. It's just they have to mature still. They're not going to poop them out immediately, but they're going to.
I could talk for an hour about the bad biology in this movie, but that one you got to allow.
That one you're buying.
It actually makes sense. Yeah.
The creature the size of Godzilla is fully cold-blooded and can't be seen by heat-seeking missiles is the biggest BS in the film.
Yeah.
That creature would have been very warm. That's the only way for something that big to live.
And there are asexual lizards.
That fast too, right?
Yeah, yeah. There are asexual lizards, and they, let's see, here's one here called the, I can't find the name. Ospicaca chakalaka, some name like that. Anyway,
chakalaka.
Sure, that's.
It says that females of one species broke form and mated with males from another species. Those outlier liaisons gave whiptails robust heterozygology, which preserves. It's a genetic diversity advantage that today's females still enjoy and propagate. With so anyway, apparently it's a thing. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, you could also just believe me. I'm telling you.
Well, you know, it's just one of those things.
The time I worked as a reptile zoologist in Polynesia.
Like, all right, probably Probably my proudest thing I ever did in university was get an A in Bio 101 because Bio 101 is freaking hard.
Fact check, right, Randy. That's what I'm doing right now. .com.
It sounds like we cut him off, listeners, but he cut himself
off. Yeah, we didn't do that. He's got a push to talk business going on there.
The other big complaint, technical, you know, all right, this isn't the way it would work, complaint is the lyrics to Singing in the Rain. There's only one time in the song where you actually go, come on with the rain, and he says it like 8 times.
Yeah,
and that's all.
But didn't you enjoy that whole scene?
No.
It's just so much fun, him just riding and singing.
Come on with the rain. Come on with the rain.
But that's how you really sing. You just sing
you
the
don't.
Chorus
the
over and over again.
The song was being playing, and he had headphones on. It was playing in real time. The song doesn't do that. He shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe he had a remix. It was the 90s.
the Puffy Combs remix of
yes.
Come On With the Rain, like Cashmere.
Yeah. Nice. Nice.
All right.
Is that your list? Clips. You're good? Okay, clips.
That's good. I've covered it all.
Here's here's our first one. Well, in fact, you know what? Perfect transition. Here's the vibrato I couldn't stand in that scene. Here you go.
Up in the clouds, so far above.
All right, I do that when I'm singing alone by myself.
Really?
Just like go over the top with it. Yeah, exactly.
All right, Tina.
Does anybody else sing in the car?
Oh yeah,
I love
yeah.
singing in the car.
Oh yeah, only alone though. I never sing. Well, if my kids are in there, I don't care if they're there. I'll sing when they're there.
Yeah,
I'll annoy them and make them embarrassed. It's fine because I'm not I'm not known for my singing voice at all. So when I really go to town, it's nobody's good time. here's a I don't know what this is.
What did you see, old man?
Oh, it's when he was doing his thing.
That's
your chick in the bucket record. Is this lighter as hypnotose unit, like how does that even work? That was
And has he ever lit a cigarette with that thing? Because good lord, the flame on it.
Did I say hypnotosis unit? Is
and
that what I said?
Hypnotosis.
Did the film need that whole...
I appreciate it, actually.
Did the film need Jean Reno? And did the film need...
Yes.
Elvis Presley? And,
everyone needs Jean Reno.
Thank you very much.
Everyone needs Jean Reno. Yeah. He's the best. Look, I know it's not a great role. I agree with you. It's kind of dumb. The Elvis thing was kind of dumb. Like, all that stuff's dumb. But he improves the films he is in.
He is a professional, you know?
Yeah. He sure
is. Yeah. True.
I find him just... watchable no matter what. Yeah, I like him now and stuff, like I liked him as the chief inspector guy in those otherwise not great Dan Brown movies.
Da
Vinci Code stuff,
Da Vinci Code trilogy, or,
yeah, you need a French dude, he's my he's your go-to, that's who you want. Here's an old guy saying, well, this is the old guy saying what Dunaway keeps repeating.
Gojira.
I'm covered in radioactive debris.
Gojira.
Okay.
Gojira.
Where's my lime jello?
This is a hospital, isn't it?
I ordered it hours ago.
What did you see?
Gojira.
Okay. Here's an annoying redhead.
I told them this is not your field, but they never listen to genius.
She's very busy
not Kathy Griffin.
No. The other, she does a ton of voice work. Like, I was looking up her stuff, video games and cartoons and just tons of it.
Don't look up her stuff.
I looked right up her stuff. that sounds bad. All right, here's Kent Brockman.
Why don't we talk about it over dinner tonight? Your place.
Mr. Kamen, you're married.
Yes, and you're very beautiful. Have I ever told you that before?
He was just doing Kent Brockman the whole movie, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
It's my favorite character he has, yeah. He's a pervy. He's all pervy. First of its kind.
We're looking at a completely incipient creature. The dawn of a new species. The first of its kind.
Oh, so much noise in this movie.
Why would you say a new species if it's the first of its kind? I don't understand.
It's redundancy.
It's not, you don't have speciation until you have like more than, anyway.
More than button.
More than button. the first word though?
As far as he's concerned.
No, not that one. Hold on.
We're looking at a completely incipient creature.
Incipient. What does incipient mean?
Incipient. New.
Means this first. More than incipient.
Okay.
Right.
Incipient. Here we go. Dictionary.com defines it. Oh, here we can hear it.
Incipient.
Thank you. Beginning to exist or appear in an initial stage. So he said the same thing three times then is what we're learning.
Correct.
Okay.
He says the word incipient, then he defines
it. Was,
the word
it was for effect.
Yeah, it was not a good effect. It was a dumb effect.
Like, let me give you the technological term, then let me break it down for the kind of smart people, and then let me break it down for the really dumb people.
Yeah. But related words would be nascent, beginning, basic, elementary, fundamental, initial, introductory. And then I'll play this one more time.
Incipient.
Okay, great. Now, nice. I'll play another clip. How about this one? This is Breasts That Talk.
As far as he's concerned, you're just a pair of breasts that talk.
Okay. She's from New York, as you can see.
A pair of breasts that talk.
That talk.
Walk.
Was she married to... She was the wife or the girlfriend?
She was married to Animal. Okay. Oh, well, yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know. Animal. Yeah. Freaking Animal. Here's Bart. Oh, no, wait. For that, here's a freaky old man laugh. I love old smoker man laughs.
Is that the fisherman?
Yeah, it just feels
like... that's the cigar guy talking to the fisherman.
Yeah, the guy's making fun of him.
Don't think you're going to catch us a cold.
All right, here's Bart in the movie.
How about a real story?
Sir, I think your story just walked by the window.
It's very Bart, but ladylike.
Don't
Bart.
Have a cow, man.
Yeah. This isn't very nice. She called him the R word. Yeah. Yeah. 1998. R word. Still getting thrown about. Yeah. What's this?
How would we do that?
Oh, can I ask a question? This is the Melrose Place military guy.
Oh, yeah. Doug Savant.
Oh, yes. O'Neill?
Yes.
No,
O'Neill.
This is Tom from Desperate Housewives.
Yes. Same guy.
We need to be that clear too. On who this is.
Sure.
That too.
Sure. Was he supposed to be a stuttery dude, or were they just doing that when he was freaked out? Because it was multiple times he would do like...
How would we do that?
Like that. And I couldn't tell if I was just supposed to be, oh, you're nervous, or, ooh, you have a condition. I couldn't figure it out.
I'm not sure it was supposed to be nervous.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Multiple times.
No, because if it was a true stutter, he would have done it trying to alert somebody, but would be unable to.
Oh, that's a good trope, isn't it?
Yeah. So yes, and also, my gosh, he looks like Jamie Lannister in this film. It's
yeah, he does. Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Nicolaj Coster Walnuts or whatever his name is.
I'm sure it's Walnuts. I'm sure that's
I'm guessing that Tom from Desperate Housewives is older than Nicolaj Coster-Waldau, but now when I think of them, I think Jamie Lannister looks 60 years old, and this guy perpetually looks 30.
Yeah.
So he was born in 64, so he's about 55, almost 55 now.
Yeah. The
Nicolaj.
Oh, 55.
Nicolaj von Walnuts. What's his age?
I don't know because I can't find. I don't know his actual name. Nicolaj.
You got to do it the hard way, which is go Game of Thrones and then dig down for
Coster-Waldau.
Yeah.
He's got to be younger than us. Oh, he's actually he's younger than us, but only Scott and I by only about a year. He was born July 1970.
Oh, okay. So. Yeah.
Older than me, old man.
Did you see the look on his face, man?
Yeah, his IMDb, you mean?
Yeah,
smoldering.
You know, did you hear my bad joke I did on Twitter? It was Jamie Lannister walks into his food pantry, and he looks at all his food and finds an old box of Raisin Bran and says, I could have sworn I pushed this Bran out of here months ago. Years ago.
I thought you were going to make a joke about how he couldn't open any of the bottles or cans.
Why? Wait, what?
Because he only has one hand.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. No, it was all about pushing a kid out a window. That's where I went.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Yeah.
That's good. Oh, the confrontation is coming. Yeah. The confrontation is coming.
I don't think there's going to be much one. That kid's a stoner. It's gonna be great. He's a stoner now. He's the three-eyed crow. He doesn't have it. Well, whatever.
You just push over his wheelchair.
Does anybody have a great prediction that is crazy but might come true for the end of Game of Thrones?
I hope Brian's so just many. Now. I want Ibbots to happen where Jamie walks up and pushes that wheelchair over. That would be amazing. Sorry.
Remember me?
I don't have a good prediction, no. I don't know. That's what I love about it is we don't have any idea, and I love it. I love it.
Do we, I mean, again, it's not spoilery to say, who do we think will be on the throne at the end of Game of Thrones?
Nobody.
Who will win the Game of Thrones?
I don't know. I mean, if it's...
I'm going to go with a dragon.
Will it be Daenerys? Will it be Jon Snow? Will it be...
The White Walker King. The White King. The Night King. Night King. He'll be in charge.
Oh, that would be a twist, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh.
What if that whole show ends with the White Walkers just come in? It's just too overwhelming. Oh, everyone dies and becomes zombies, and he's in charge.
No one would see that coming, that's for sure. And I bet you George R. R. Martin's books would go a different direction.
Yeah. I mean, this is what's fun about it, is we don't have any idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, my crazy prediction that just might come true is Cersei Lannister gets killed by Jaime Lannister, which I guess requires that Bronn somehow fail on his mission where he's walking north with a crossbow.
Yeah.
But anyway, Jaime Lannister kills Cersei Lannister, who is not going to leave King's Landing. And then you find out that it was Arya wearing Jaime Lannister's face, and she had killed Jaime Lannister.
Oh, interesting.
Not bad.
All right. Yeah, none of this is spoilers, everybody listening, because we don't know.
Because it's not real.
Yeah, right. we're just making this up.
Maybe. Thanos gets the Iron Throne. Yeah, I think Thanos. That's the
Yep, he snaps his fingers and everyone fades. Yep. I'm ready for it. All right, here's another clip. This is angry acting Ebert. So here you go.
You've caused more damage than that goddamn thing did.
All right, Mayor, calm down. Just have some candy.
No, I don't want any candy. Leave me alone.
Jeez. These guys need to
I couldn't understand. He was eating those Hershey Kisses, but he was never unwrapping them. No. I did not like that.
Neither did he. He's chewing on tinfoil. Think of that on your fillings.
That offended me.
Yeah, that should offend you. Here's a dumb discussion.
Wait, I don't get it. If he's the first of his kind, how can he be pregnant? I mean, doesn't he need a mate?
Not if he reproduces asexually.
Where's the fun in that?
Where's the fun in that?
I don't know. Have you ever... produce a day sexually?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know what that's like. I don't want to know.
I don't want to think about it.
All right, here we go. This is something about what? I don't know what this is.
The creature is either about to lay eggs or already has.
Oh, this is when he's telling everybody what's up.
Or is this constipated?
Wow, he sounded like Ferris Bueller.
Totally, like walking down the hall in the credits, just talking to the camera.
Yeah. The creature is either about to lay eggs.
Yeah, it's like either you get out there going or you try to go home trying or whatever he says. All right, here's another one.
Try to go home.
Are you trying to tell us that there's another one of those things out there?
Sure is. And then my favorite line that Ebert said.
What is this, the virgin lizard?
Get it?
And then everybody laughed and I was like, no.
Yeah, I would have laughed.
What is this, the virgin lizard?
It's pretty funny. It's all right. Because, you know, it can self, you know, it's like Mary. It's
I got it. You know? Oh, I got the joke.
Okay. something mentioned by name.
They mentioned you by name.
Yeah.
Oh, you heard the top of the show. All right. Here's where things got bad for me. And I hated every scene like this. It was just some cheesy, sad dialogue. And I hated it. And with the music was just ridiculously over the top. Here you go.
Make sure that Hicks finds that nest before it's too late.
I'll try.
Ugh. Ugh.
I wanted to ask you to capture some more of the wrong music at the wrong time. And the worst, the absolute worst, is Matthew Broderick out in the street sort of seeing the whole thing for the first time.
Yeah.
And there's music that's like right out of an antebellum plantation movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weirdest thing. I should have asked you to capture it because you just will not believe it until you watch and hear it. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not great. They're not great at their cues. Yeah, it's not great. Here's a, I don't know what this is.
What have I done, animal? What have I become?
Oh, you know, she got a Razzie that year for this role.
Yeah, it's so
poor
sad.
Girl. Yeah, it's a little sad, right? Like, you don't want to just tell people to, did we lose Ibbit?
He has the score problems. He's popping off.
This
popping
is
back and he's in.
Oh,
okay. This is also a movie that garnered a bunch of Razzies, and so it's like you could be doing the best work of your career, but you're in the wrong place to be considered good.
Yeah, Yeah, she hasn't done well. Let's see, she jumped out of acting at in 2008 was the last role she had. Don't know what she's up to now, but she got out, so she's not interested. Not interested, but she seemed I don't know, she's fine. Like I don't know about I don't know what her range was like, but she's fine. Yeah, I don't. If she gets one, they all get one. Nobody in this movie is that great.
That's my point. Like this is just a movie that dragged a bunch of people down. Like Hank Azaria is Hank Azaria. Yeah. He's like this is a guy who does the same thing in any live action film he's in.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
And like so he got a Razzie. If he got nominated for a Razzie for this one, it's just because the movie's bad, not because he.
Right. You don't give it to Jean Reno because he's always good. Never give him a Razzie. He never deserves one. Final or what? Oh, this is a weird sound that the girl made. So I'm going to play it. Here you go.
What?
Isn't that weird?
Did she? No, she squeezed a bicycle horn.
No, she was. She even said, I forgot the lead up, but he said, "What would you do if I told you this?" And that freaked her out, and she went, made that sound.
Yeah.
Which is pretty weird. And then, oh, this is a good one. I hate when this happens. So technology problems. Movies always have them, right? Where they refer to the internet or computers or something. They get it all wrong. When she said this, I just about blew my stack. Here you go.
The network is on an intranet.
Their network
is on an internet.
Now, if she just said intranet, I would have said, oh, well done. Good job. That is a thing. I get it. You're tied into a locally controlled wide area network, but somewhat locally controlled. I get it. That makes sense. But no, she says the network is on an internet.
On an internet. One of them. Dumbasses. One, two, or three.
Dumbasses. All right.
This is really like this movie. What is 98? It's probably being made and written and made in 96 and 97. The internet was kind of new to most.
Yeah, new. Yeah, that's true. Like we're 4 years into the World Wide Web, and
right.
10 or 15 into use groups and all that crap. And before that, nobody knew anything. So yeah, this is all new. And this is the only time they did it. Like they just had that very brief scene where they had to deal with whatever computer thing they had to deal with. But
hey, at least it wasn't a Unix system.
Yeah. Another Jurassic Park reference.
Right.
I
was in and then I was out and then I was out again.
Yep. Well, you're back, and that's the important thing. Hey everybody, yes. Ibbit's back. I'm recording again, and that's fantastic.
Yay. Where the heck? I missed all the clips.
most of them. I think I have one left. Oh no, I played this one.
The network is on an intranet.
That was just a dumb thing for anyone to say. Yes. Yeah. It made me mad. But that was all that was. And now it's time for this. It's time for the Film Sack Checklist. Don't look up. That's a lizard taint. Check.
Yeah.
Fish piles fix everything. Check. And finally, soda can down the train is a bad idea. Check. Mm. That was enough to wake up the lizard. How stupid.
Oh, right. Yes. No, down the train. I thought you were missaying down the drain, but it totally was down the train.
Down the train. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This movie went down the train.
Quickly. Star Trek connections, there are a number of them. Clyde Kasutsu is a Japanese tanker skipper. He played a recurring role on TNG.
I'm a tanker skipper.
Derek Webster was the Utah captain. He was the captain of the ship, the Utah ship. Played Lieutenant Sanders in Star Trek The Next Generation. Frank Welker did creature vocals, which is pretty much his job all the time. And he also did same thing for Star Trek. Yes.
But there's two things in there I want to talk about. One, nuclear submarines in the Hudson River. No.
No.
Probably not. Not
two,
deep enough. Yeah.
Yeah, they should have been fast attack subs. Mm. And by the way, I can't imagine them, a U.S. fast attack sub failing to kill anything. Like, they with one shot would turn a blue whale into some blubber floating in the ocean. Mm-hmm. There, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But two. Can we talk about the ridiculous elephant and lion sounds that were coming from the creature?
Yeah, mixed in with like you could hear some of the old school Godzilla noises layered in there as well, and it came out just messy. It was just kind of a loud.
Every time I heard an elephant or a lion, I was just like, oh, Godzilla just opened up the Central Park Zoo.
Maybe right? It's in his mouth. Right. Maybe he ate the zoo. So he's got a bunch of zoo animals in there freaking out. Who knows? There's a ton of others in here, but they're all like bit parts. My favorite is probably the tanker cook, played by Lloyd Kino in TOS, the original series. He played Woo in the episode The Omega Glory.
Woo.
Woo.
That's also what he said when he got the part.
Yeah.
Nah.
There were really a ton of those. All right. Soundtrack grade, I give it a NBFWIS, which is not bad for what it is.
Yeah. I totally disagree. This is one of the worst scores I've ever heard.
I don't know. It had its moments. It's just inappropriate and sometimes, but I think the overall, I don't know. I mean, you're probably right, but like, I kind of want to go hear it on its own and just see what I think. Mm-hmm. Just to see. You know,
there was absolutely on its own. Yeah. It was a very good opportunity to have a Godzilla theme, like a piece of music you'd hear whenever he was on screen. Dun, 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 or something like that. I guess that was the Incredible Hulk.
Like the Hulk?
That was the only one I could think of. But they did a total missed opportunity. It'd been great. Yeah.
There you go. Da, 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 da. Well, all right then. There's that. Now it's
good pick up on the Incredible Hulk as well, Brian Dunaway. That was impressive.
This is pretty good. Let's get to the Twitter post. This is where in 280 characters or less, you guys sum this up. Let's start with Randy.
Godzilla, you're gonna come in out of that rain with a fistful of pregnancy tests, and you're gonna meet your ex-girlfriend, and there's a guy with a camcorder capturing video of everything, just like a Saturday night.
Yeah. Knew that was coming.
Where else would it go?
That's right. Dunaway.
As soon as you said guy with a camcorder, that's when I picked. Oh, it's going to be an Ibbets house.
Yeah, always.
It's Godzilla. It's Gojira, you moron. And none of these baby Zillas look like Godzuki, and that is a crime against my childhood.
Godzuki. I forgot about the scrappy do of Godzilla.
Ugh. Ugh. I mean, even by then, the Japanese even have to admit they lost the thread, right?
Like, yeah.
You guys are done with that guy. He was always smiling, by the way. Permanent grin on that little shit.
Yeah I love it. Godzuki, come on.
He fell out of the land before time. Like, that's a leftover land before time character.
Oh my gosh, yes. That doesn't move very much.
Yeah. And it was actually, have you ever seen the Manila? He's the son of Godzilla.
No.
Manila?
Yeah, no, he looks like something come out of Land of the Lost. Manila. Mini Illa is actually how you say it, but Manila is how it looks. Right. Mini Illa.
I'm into it. I want to know more. All right. That's it for that. Check this out.
No, the music was for
Brian Ibbett.
It's not going to be very good now. Oh. Godzilla. Roland Emmerich gives us a 2-hour thesis that questions the existence of Godzilla.
That's pretty good. What do you mean? Yeah. That's really good. All right, now this. I thought I had everybody. I just handed this card. These are the alternate titles. Actually, 3 of them this week. It's crazy. It was almost called Gojira. They probably should have done that. The next one was Asexual Healing. That was almost the name.
Yeah.
And like finally, that. Only a Scintilla of Godzilla, because there's not really much else in there.
Only 11 milla of Godzilla.
There you go. There is a chance for us to do a thing every week, which is read emails and play your calls. And we're going to do that this week. We start with Shay Edwards, who sent us an email and said, Scott, Brian, and Randy on the Nathan Fillion and Brendan Fraser comparison when it comes to Canadianness. I submit the following comparisons to see if we can pinpoint what it means. Chris Farley or John Goodman and John Candy. Christopher Lloyd and Jim Carrey, or maybe even Dana Carvey and Mike Myers. As a Canadian Maritimer myself, I think you might be onto something.
From all of that, give me Mike Myers. That's my final conclusion. Like, I have to sum that all. And I've said this on the show before, but check out the book Canada by Mike Myers, and specifically the audiobook. It is amazing, and he reads it for himself, and it's awesome.
Oh, I would actually probably enjoy that. Didn't even know that was a thing. Did you guys know he had a book? I didn't know.
No, I did not.
That's no. news to
and,
me.
And really quickly, speaking of Dana Carvey, that Master of Disguise is now streaming. I don't think it's right for FilmSack, but it is
absolutely
something we've talked about on this show quite a bit, and it's finally available.
It's the movie that ended basically his movie options.
I mean, almost both began and ended his movie career, but he has had other things. But
Other than the success
Wayne's
he had.
World.
Yeah, Wayne's World's yes, it.
Right. Right.
Well, that's well, pretty
I love
much
the Dana Carvey show. Did you guys watch that back in the day?
Yeah, great yes, and I watched too. That documentary. Yeah. Right, the documentary is fantastic.
Yeah, I love that documentary. Too. I don't think the episodes are as good as everyone thinks. They really cherry picked for that for that doc. But it was fun to see Colbert and what's the other one? Stephen Colbert and the other Stephen.
No, come on,
is it Michael Scott?
Scott, the office. Michael
yeah,
Scott,
why can't they give his name Stephen? Steve Carell.
Steve
Carell. Jeez,
I was getting hung up on. Yep.
All right. We got a call. This is about trope alerts, and this came to us at 801-471-0462. Check it out.
I do have a question. Why is it, Scott, that every single time that I hear something from FilmSack, when they have a trope alert, you always have to look it up? What is the deal? I mean, you guys spend all this time setting it up, stuff like that, and it's a trope alert. He's like, hang on, I got this credit. Why don't you just have that, like, ready to go? Because you know it's going to happen. Why is that? I mean, do you have, like, a soundboard and it's, like, two stages back or something like that? What's going on? Thanks. I'd like to hear your answer. Bye.
You know, it's almost a trope that Scott can't find.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you what it is. It's simple. I have a bunch of stuff out in front in different windows, and sometimes Randy will go, oh, you know what? This is a trope. And I'll go, oh, shit, I got to scramble, and I got to alt tab, and like, oh, there it is. Okay, there's the app. Okay, now I hit the thing. Like, it's just not, it's not like a perma button that's in front of all things that I can just hit. So that's my best answer. I don't know.
I don't think it should be.
Yeah.
I think it's way more fun having it like it is.
Yeah.
There you go. So here's a trope.
Okay.
Did we have to tell Matthew Broderick, there's a sign of something really impressive here for you to see, and he's standing and going, what is it? What's the sign?
Right.
What am I seeing? What am I looking for? And we have this huge crane shot pulling away. That trope is no longer ever entertaining. I am not at all impressed by that trope.
No.
We're done.
That you're standing in a giant footprint. Yeah.
It's the Palmolive dish soap trope.
Yeah, yeah. You're soaking
you're
in it.
You're soaking in it.
Yeah, you're standing in it.
Oh, my gosh. You're standing in it. That's even better. You're standing in it. It's dumb. Also, you'd save a lot of money now because you could do just a drone. Just have a drone go up, you know? You don't have to pay for a crane, so... Drones have saved a lot of filmmakers a lot of
freaking
money.
But didn't you have to step down into that footprint?
Well, he thought it was
standing in it.
Yeah. I think he thought it was a dig.
Well, it's according to how fast Godzilla was moving, the footprint may be heavier imprinted in the front as opposed to the
back.
But
the movie acts like he had been blindfolded and lowered into that spot, and then they pulled the mask off of him and were like, "Well, what do you think?"
Yeah. Are we to believe that they were having a relationship later in the movie that he would look at him and not want to kill him, and that they were, you know, he trusted him or whatever? Am I reading that wrong? Was there supposed to be a bond between Matthew Broderick and our lizard?
Yes.
Yeah,
it was from,
absolutely.
From the love theme music the first time they see each other.
Yeah.
Like, I literally wrote down, oh, shit, he's falling in love with the lizard.
Yeah, but it's based on nothing. Like, there's nothing about him that's any different than any other human in his way. I don't understand.
No,
why.
and he's not generally in love with reptiles. He zaps them out of the mud at the beginning of...
Yeah, he's getting those worms. What are those called? They have a name. What's the genus of worms? No, it's something else. They have a name, like the class of species.
Annelids, I think.
Annelids? I think you're
annelids,
right.
Annelids,
something
I
like
think
that.
Worms.
Yeah.
I'm just going to call them worms.
Did y'all ever eat a worm? You ever eaten an earthworm?
Oh, yeah.
No.
I did.
I've had them in cookies.
Ooh.
I saw a movie once about how
you
to eat
have had
fried
them in
worms.
Cookies as well. I
did
think.
I? Wait, what did we have? Wait, did we eat that?
So, I think a listener sent us cookies that had worms in them. Yeah.
Was it worms?
Yeah, we've eaten crickets. We've eaten.
They were those grub things.
And something.
Yeah, those.
And
those
we've had.
Were they actual like earthworms?
I think we had cookies that had earthworms in them.
Oh my gosh, I don't remember this.
Sent to us from Earthworm Jim, probably.
Oh, I love that game. It's not as good as we think it was, by the way. It doesn't hold up.
No, I didn't think it was as good as we thought it was back then.
It was all right. It wasn't great.
Fine.
All right. Where the hell are we? I've lost all track of everything. Oh, there's your phone. You can leave us that phone call or those voicemails real easy, everybody. 801-471-0462. You can send us an email, rather, if you'd prefer, like Shay did. And that address is filmsack@gmail.com. Our next film is actually not a film. It's a watch-along because a bunch of us are in Vegas next week. And because of that, we have to put up a little mini thing. And that mini thing this week will be our watching of The Twilight Zone Season 3 Episode... What is it, Dunaway?
Oh, that would be Season 5.
Oh, I think it's three.
Hold on a second. I think... Well, wait, you're right. Right. Hold on a second.
It's a good life.
It moved. It's a good life. It is Season 3, as you said.
Yeah.
It is Episode 8.
8.
On Netflix. Yeah, 3-8. That's on Netflix. That doesn't necessarily mean that lines up with your collection or something else.
Right. But that's
interesting. Season 4 is not available on Netflix, but they have 1, 2, 3, and 5, but no Season 4.
Ooh, you're
right.
That's like the 13th floor of a building.
That's weird.
Yeah, they avoid it. They got some superstitions.
Some licensing issue or something. That's bizarre.
Put on your tinfoil hat and let's discuss it. Right. Anyway, that'll be our thing next week. When we get back from that, we're back to movies, and we'll see a few of you there in Vegas. Uh-huh. I know a bunch of fans of Film Sack will be there and get a chance to hang out. It'll be great. So, so that's the plan. Filmsack.com is our website. You can leave us voicemails, like I said, 801-471-0462. You can follow us on Twitter, and you can leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. It helps us in lots and lots of ways and helps spread the word about this nearly 10-year-old production. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Gojira!
We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
What have I done, animal?